of people do zebra striping. It's just called... It's where you drink an alcoholic drink and then you choose a non-alc drink in between. So they're like choosing now to not just drink alcohol all night. So some people are making that conscious choice. And eventually sometimes it even leads to sobriety.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most...
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. All right. Well, I'm in here in the studio with Brian as my co-host today, filling in for Christian. And I'm very excited about our special guest. Our guest tonight is Brittany Hyde. She's the founder of The Little Sober Bar. She's an entrepreneur, a mom, and has a term, how do you pronounce it? It's on your hat.
Yes, Soberbanite.
Soberbanite. Mm-hmm. I love it. And we're going to dive all into Sober Curious, different pathways to recovery, and of course, a little bit about The Little Sober Bar. So thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so what can you tell us about a little history of your recovery journey, the path to The Little Sober Bar?
Yeah.
What that looked like?
So they're kind of one and the same for me. I really wanted to take more control of my mental health. I realized I kind of went off the deep end for a couple years, just deciding to settle and be a mom and be a suburban housewife, Soberbanite housewife.
Like it.
So I kind of... stopped trying to be an entrepreneur, decided my kids are going to school and I'm going to do the bus thing. And that turned into bus stop beers and drinking every night and going grocery shopping with, you know, car sodas is what we called them.
Oh, yeah. Very familiar with those.
Yeah.
I had car powder on my grocery trips.
Well, yeah. Sure. I didn't talk about that yet. So, well, I mean, if you get home at 4 and your kids get on the bus at 6, you can sleep all day.
Oh, yeah.
So all of that was a little bit too much, and I realized the common thread there was that I was off my meds, and I guess I decided I really liked that version of me, the on-meds version. And that's for me is like anxiety, depression, that kind of thing. And then realized it was actually ADHD. Mm. So I decided to start taking better control of my mental health, and that included... stopping drinking, because I really just, I was like, let's just be curious. What's that like to be an adult without drinking? I've never experienced that before. Mm-hmm. And I call it my failure. It's not really a fail, but my failure. I started drinking again because in social situations, I felt out of place and isolated and just not invited anymore. Mm-hmm. So drinking is just easier, so that way you can be included. So my second year, I did the dry January thing, and I said, let's just keep going. And I got to month 4, and I was like, this is awesome. You should celebrate with a glass of champagne. And I was like, that's interesting that mm-hmm. my mindset immediately went to alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even in, like, a celebrating not drinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of, in between all of that, I had been thinking of, like, what's my next entrepreneurship move, because I'm not someone who can sit still, ADHD.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of where the Little Sober Bar started, was just my own thing. I'm my own journey. I just felt it's not fair to not join in at social settings because there's no drink. And I'm not a kid. I don't want a kid soda or a juice box.
No, grape juice, yeah.
A Diet Coke. Like, yeah. No thanks.
It's just not what I wanted.
Yeah.
So the entrepreneurial spirit was within you. What was your first experience with that? You said that you kind of were doing that before this whole thing happened. What was that?
I actually owned a natural parenting store. So when my kids were first born, I did the crunchy mom life, cloth diapering, baby wearing, all of that. And through that, I became, of course, a mom influencer. It was big in the time that I had kids. And I would travel and speak all over the nation and do a lot of different things. But the store was something I could do from home with my kids and help people at the same time. But I stepped away from that because the industry was kind of shifting.
Mm.
And I really just wanted to, like I said, settle and see what being a regular housewife was like, and it was just not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the, you know, you said you tried Dry January and then you kept going. Was there any resource that you leaned on in order to keep going?
Not really. It was just me.
Just you.
Myself. My partner, he's sober too, but not, he's by choice. Like, he just doesn't drink.
Oh, right on.
Just what he doesn't do. So that kind of helped. I mean, not having it in the house. But I will say that I had a family member move in who is an alcoholic. So that was interesting. It also was kind of a deterrent to not keep drinking. Seeing, so like, while I'm trying not to drink, mm-hmm. watching somebody who does drink at the same time, it was kind of like, okay, you can keep doing this. You can keep going. And the cool thing is she now no longer drinks. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like the flip-flop of that.
Yeah.
That's
you think cool. that your journey had a good experience on her or a good influence on her?
I think so.
Yeah.
I like to think so, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when that thought crossed your mind about, oh, let's celebrate with a glass of champagne, did you have the glass of champagne?
Nope.
How did you just ignore the thought or?
Yeah.
Nice.
Pretty straightforward right there.
Yeah.
Love it.
For me, it was like the mental part of it. I was just like, oh, so shocked. That was my go-to.
Yeah.
That for me, I was just like, wow, you did this because you wanted to have better control over your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So for your mind to immediately go that direction, clearly you don't have control over it.
Yeah.
So let's not even try it. And that's awesome. I know that not everybody has that ability. For me, it was a lot of isolation too, like not having it in the house and not being around anybody because I didn't get invited anymore. You know, like those kind of things sort of helped. I will say though, I was tempted when I found like a mini bottle from my family member. I was like, you know, it's not that bad.
Right.
It's just mini.
It's exactly. It's so cute. And my go-to phrase when I was
harmless, right?
It's fine. My go-to phrase when I was drinking was, if it's free, it's for me. So.
Oh, hey, good motto.
It doesn't help when you're like a pretty girl with, I had like long blue and black hair. I was so cool.
You're still really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. But I was so cool at the bar too, because everything was free.
Yeah.
Everything.
Never had that experience.
Oh. Yeah.
I was so not that cool.
Well,
throw out your hair.
Yeah.
Color
free
blue.
At the bar for me.
Yeah. Well, so you just ask too. Sometimes people just say yes.
You know, I never did try.
That's what I'm saying.
I should have gone back and asked. Dang
no,
it.
No.
Just have the confidence of a pretty woman.
Yeah. That's what I've been missing my whole life, the confidence of a pretty woman.
Exactly.
So you mentioned the social isolation of not being invited out, you know, and so did you have, like, the support of like, your partner and anybody else, or?
It's mostly my partner and my kids. I mean, they're 9 and almost 11 now, so they're very aware of those moments. And I had some moments where we would get invited and my son would say, Mom, you're not paying attention to me. You're just like all the other parents. And so there was like moments like that, that really like shocked me back into clarity, mm-hmm. to where I would bring my own drinks. I didn't share, which I now looking back, I'm like, well, I wish I would have, because then maybe it would have been a different outcome. But no, I mean, it was just us, our little family, and just kind of refocusing back in home was good for me. I think I needed it more than any of the rest of it. I think I needed to just kind of realize what was most important, because I did a lot of escapism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the start, was there any like emotional struggle?
Oh, that whole feeling all your emotions at once thing. Yeah. No.
Me neither.
It was horrible.
Fire. Like all the time.
Yeah. Like I want to like fight everybody, but also cry every day. And oh my gosh, I thought I was not going to make it through that part. because I shy away from those things on a regular basis. Like, oh, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, right.
That's my vibe. It's just, let's just reframe it and keep moving. But at the start, it was definitely hard. That was the hardest part. Now it's a lot better, a lot easier.
So what helped you through that? You know, because I can relate to that experience very much. Like, oh, my God. Now everything is so raw. I'm feeling everything. I'm thinking everything. Everything's on fire all of the time. What is happening? What helped you through those moments?
I took a lot of – well, I did actually join a book club. So I joined book club, and those ladies are amazing. They're very supportive. We did a lot of deep diving into different genres of books, not just reading for fun. So one of them was a book about emotions, and it was kind of, I like to call it like the encyclopedia of emotions. Mm. So to me, I was able to look through the book and figure out what I was actually feeling and kind of try and decipher that. I don't know if it's like what normal people do, but.
Well, what I heard was you had people with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had people you could bounce things off of too.
Yeah, once a month it was nice. Like, but it's not. The day-to-day is very hard, especially when the people that you were drinking with are very close to your home. So for me, it was very much isolation in the house. We stay at home. We don't. If we're not invited, we don't go. And it was nice to have that once a month thing. But it's still very hard to do it by yourself and keep going.
Yeah.
But it was nice not having a job, because I lost my job 2 weeks after buying the bar. So I didn't go anywhere. I was just like at home and building a business, focusing my, I think that's probably what I did, was focused my energy on my business instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made a joke to my daughter's teacher the other day. She said, "Your daughter says you're a workaholic." And I was like, "Well, I don't drink, so it's got to go somewhere." That was probably the most true statement I'd ever made.
Yeah. That energy's got to go somewhere, right? Yeah. That's cool.
No, I had a boss previously that always knew when I was struggling at home, because I was always picking up every shift that I could. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's like, well, I don't drink. And, you know, and I would be isolated from my community during those times. I'm like, then I'm just going to live at work, because at least, you know, it's better than what I used to do. Is it the most healthy thing for me? No. But it's a lot healthier than my alternative.
Sure.
Yeah. So today, do you have like a community of sober people that you're able to share your lifestyle with?
At work.
At work.
I mean, I've expanded so much that we have a great team, and some of them are, well, I guess maybe about half of them are sober or in recovery. So it's nice to be able to bounce ideas off of, or like joke around and make those jokes like, oh yeah, I'm a workaholic now. Like, it's, and it to not be so intense and not triggering. So it's a nice balance.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Cause I'll make those jokes at my job. And there's two of us in recovery at where I work. And then the rest of them are not. And so we'll make jokes, and then everyone else will be like, okay, so on another note, I'm like, oh, come on, guys.
You just
funny.
Don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I made a smoking crack joke at Thanksgiving one time, and nobody got it.
See,
you know?
I can't joke about drugs around coworkers or the family, or else they just look like, you're not in our family. We don't do that. So you're at home, you're working on the little sober bar. When did that, come as an idea of something that you could do?
So about, I guess during my failure is where the idea came about, because I was failing because I was out and about and there was no options. And for me, I'm a lover of options. From my soul, I believe that people should have the choice in life. Whether they make good choices or bad choices, that's not my decision. But for me personally, I'm like, I like to go to the bar and open the menu and pick what I want to drink. Not, oh, we have 3 mocktails and a non-alc beer. Or we just have a non-alc beer. And I was like, but that's not what I want. I guess I'll have water. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with sparkling water. There's nothing wrong with water. But for me, limiting myself made it harder. I like to identify with the sober curious title, because it feels less pressure for me. And it makes it easier for me to stick to that. Mm. So.
And can you talk more about sober curious?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean to you?
To me, sober curious just means that, well, number one, the less pressure aspect. I think it allows me to choose to be sober every day, which I love, having that control, because that was part of my journey. It also really encompasses everyone who's not quite to the strictly sober line. People who are interested in maybe cutting back, or a lot of people do zebra striping. It's just called... It's where you drink an alcoholic drink and then you choose a non-alc drink in between. So they're like choosing now to not just drink alcohol all night. So some people are making that conscious choice. And eventually sometimes it even leads to sobriety, mm-hmm. just like a natural transition.
Yeah, that is one thing that I love about the wide variety of non-alcoholic beverages out there today, is that sobriety has kind of become trendy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to gatekeep sobriety, like, even for a second, because even if it's like, oh, well, you don't need to be sober, I need to be sober, I don't care.
Right.
Like, alcohol, there's really not that... In my opinion, from what I've heard, is that there's no benefits to drinking alcohol. So it's like... It's great if you decide that you just want to stop and then you mm-hmm. can have something that tastes like it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, there are people that'll say like, oh, if you say you drink for the taste, you're just lying. It's like, no, some mm-hmm. of those drinks did taste good, mm-hmm. You know. And so some people might not be ready to just put everything down. But if you pick up something similar but less harmful, it sounds like harm reduction to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool. That you're out here providing that option for people. Because, yeah, I've gone to places where it's like, oh, I'll just have water, you know, because my options are water, iced tea, mm-hmm. lemonade, or Diet Coke. And I'm like, I don't like any of those drinks.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also the social anxiety part. That's kind mm-hmm. of where I fell in, was because of my social anxiety, I would reach for an alcoholic beverage. And that's what I learned in my journey. So having something in my hand
mm-hmm.
that's a mocktail, or just something else, makes me feel a little less anxious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In social situations.
Yeah. I get that. If you ever see me at a party, I'm grabbing snacks mm-hmm. just the whole time, because it gives me that same sensation, right? Like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm doing something. I don't have to feel so much pressure to talk to you and make conversation mm-hmm. and all that. No, I'm like eating, yeah, you know, or yeah. something like that. Yeah.
I was at this, this cookout, a little while ago, and everyone there was drinking except for like me and one other person. And they weren't drinking because they had like a medical procedure coming up. And so they had, you know, some no beers in their fridge. And I had just been drinking water, because I've always been fine just drinking water because I do love it. It keeps me alive. I'm very grateful for that beverage. You know, so I don't mind it. But I was uncomfortable in this situation. I didn't have a way out, which was my first mistake, because for me, whenever I go into new social situations, I always need to have my own way out. And mm-hmm. I didn't in this instance. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay. So I start bumming cigarettes off people because my vape was dead. So I have no way out. My vape is dead. And so I'm bumming cigarettes off people and I'm just so uncomfortable. And so I grabbed a no beer and I was like, and I just had one and I sipped it. But I remember for me, like, that process was like, I was so conscious of, I need to sip this. I need to sip this. I need to sip this. But that is because, like, I'm the type of person that you hand me an iced coffee, you turn around, turn back around, my coffee's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, I down the hatch with anything I drink. Mm-hmm. But with it tasting like something that used to be a drink of choice, I was like, okay, this might not actually be smart for me to mm-hmm. continue on with, but that doesn't mean that that's true for everyone. But I definitely relate to that social anxiety, need a drink, because normally energy drink for me or a root beer, you know, something to quell that anxiety and feel like I'm fitting in. Because mm-hmm. water, just people, it's obvious you're drinking water, you know?
And they ask.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing. My first year, the failure is, I had like a whole, like a Yeti full of water, and I'd lied that it was a vodka soda. And I was like,
why did I do that?
Like, the weirdest thing ever. Mm-hmm. But it's because, like, the conversations that would happen about people not in the group that don't drink, I would listen to that and I'd feel so uncomfortable that I felt like I had to lie.
Mm. Yeah. I really like what you were saying about how you like to fall into this sober curious idea, because it takes the pressure off of this, I can't drink because if I drink again, I'll die or whatever, right? Like, having worked in treatment a lot, so many people come in and they're just terrified at this idea that I'll never, like, I can never drink again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you ease that pressure off of them? For us, we used to talk about, listen, forget about all that. How about just live today, right? But I liked how you put it of like, hey, this takes all of that weight off of this idea that I can never drink ever again or anything like that, and opens it up for a different perspective. I enjoyed your mentality about that.
Yeah, I think it it helps some people who succumb to peer pressure. Like, that is something that I felt for me, I did. So having that like a way out, essentially, through words and just really focusing my mindset on that, it helped so much.
Yeah.
But I know that I probably will never drink again because I made lots of decisions when I was drinking, and like, basically I'm a free lover. I love everyone all the time. And when I drink, I really love everybody all
the
time.
Sure.
So trying to like be an entrepreneur while you're doing that and building a business, it's hard.
Yeah.
But harder for me is having pressure to do something. Someone telling me to do something. Absolutely not.
I hate it.
I'm going to now do the opposite thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you tell me I can't do it, then I really want to do it. So if you tell me I can't drink for the rest of my life, I'm going to figure out a way I can. But telling myself, like, just today I'm not going to drink, way easier.
Yeah.
Way easier.
Oh, yeah.
So what has been the community response with the Little Sober Bar?
Oh, honestly, it's been amazing. It's way different than I thought it would be.
What were you thinking it would be?
Oh, my gosh. Well, the first year, when I was failing, I kept testing it out by saying, you know, I really think I might want to start a sober bar. And I would just say it in different situations. And people were like, that's a great idea. You should do it. And I was like, really? Like, I live in a town that's very heavily drinking at the time when I was stopped. When I first stopped, it was very much like we would stay out super late and just party all night. So I really didn't think that if I did it, people would buy things or they would come out or support it. Now we do get the every so often we get negative comments, of course, but the majority of the community is just happy that we exist. There's some people who don't buy things. They just want to say like thank you and they'll just tip us, which is super nice.
Wow.
But a lot of people say stuff like, oh, I was gonna drink, but I'm so glad you're here. Or I came to this event. It's like a wine and something else event, but I don't drink. I just came for like the food. I really didn't think I was going to have an option. This is amazing. Mm. Wow. So stories like that, I'm just like, whether we have one person at our pop-up, I care about making money. I'm a business owner.
Right.
Yeah.
But sometimes just going and being an option somewhere could change someone's life or could just make them happy. And that's kind of why I do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I've had multiple people in my family, and I shared this with you the night we met, that like they've seen the little trailer around town. They take a picture and they send it to me and they go, look at this thing. Have you heard of this? This is really cool. Because I'm, you know, recovery doesn't really run in my family. The need for recovery doesn't run in my family. And so a lot of people in my family don't get it, but they see the word sober and they're like, that's you. You can do this thing. I'm like, yeah, I can. Thanks. but it's really cool, you know, to see the types of the options that you serve, because it's not like you do have sodas and they're fun sodas. I can't just walk into the gas station and get those sodas. Mm-hmm. But then you also have things that are a little bit beyond sodas. And so why don't you talk about you said Strictly Sober and Sober Curious. That's your menu items.
Yep.
So what does that look like?
So for us, we try and keep our core values always intact. So no matter what we do, it's based off of that, which we have a lot of them, but one of the main ones is safety and knowledge, options, obviously, and atypical. Those are like kind of some core values. So our two main menus, we have a Strictly Sober menu and a Sober Curious menu. And even at our headquarters, we have two separate fridges. So you have a Strictly Sober fridge and a Sober Curious fridge. On our paper menu, it's like the white boxes are Strictly Sober, the black box is Sober Curious. So no matter where you go, no matter where we are, no matter if you come in the store or see us at a pop-up, you know that there's something for you. and it's thought out and it's curated, and it's not just, oh, there's a few options, but the rest are sober curious, or mm-hmm. oh, there's a ton of mocktails and there's only a couple sober curious things. So we try and keep it pretty balanced, have as many options as possible, but safe, so that when you walk up, you see these are my choices, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of them.
And what do, like, separates something as strictly sober or sober curious?
Yeah. So for us, our strictly sober menu is made up of waters, of course. We do try and stick to like Himalayan sea salt water or something different, like water in a can, hops water. We also have craft sodas. So like you said, root beer, of course.
Of course. It's not a party Sarah, without
apparently
root beer.
Sarah is an expert on root beers.
Not an expert,
this is a new
just
thing.
Just a connoisseur with a spreadsheet. Sorry. Multiple spreadsheets.
I love a spreadsheet. I might need to take a look at that.
Yeah.
I'll show you after the show.
But we have stuff that's like banana cream soda too. So it's like fun things. Ring
good.
Pop soda. So a lot of different options in that menu. We've actually added a zero sugar sodas option too. We had a little girl come up to the bar and with her family, and there was nothing she could have because she had diabetes. And so that immediately, I was like, how do we fix that? Let's find something that's zero sugar but still tastes good and it's fun.
And isn't water.
And isn't water. Yeah, because, I mean, she's little, too, and she wanted a soda like her brother. Mm-hmm. So we fixed that. But then we also have our zero-proof cocktails, which is what I like to call it. Mocktails, it's the same thing. But there's such a negative connotation with the word mocktail in the, I guess, not sober world is the right word to say for that. But people who are not sober think of mocktails as like less than. So I'm like, these are our zero proof cocktails. They're multidimensional adult alternative beverages.
Ooh, I like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do that.
Say something
you
to that.
No one can say that's less than.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you've been talking a lot about these places that y'all will pop up to. Where would we find you? Where are you usually going? What types of places and events are you at?
We are at a lot of community festivals, concerts, any public venue event we can go to. We try to run 3 to 4 events a day on the weekends and weekdays now. And then we also are hired for private events. So that's kind of our bread and butter. It's where we get to be creative and we get to mix up drinks. And we've started bringing on some more talented mixologists. So there's going to be some cool stuff that comes out of our kitchen,
awesome.
Hopefully. And then, just anywhere. People want us to come out for like birthday parties, or sometimes a boutique will have a grand opening or customer appreciation. Corporate happy hours, because they don't think about the fact that some coworkers might be secretly struggling, or maybe it's not a great idea to drink around your coworkers.
Yeah. God, I never heard of such a thing.
Me either.
Do you ever do weddings?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually just did one last weekend, I think.
Yeah, I was like, that'd be a really cool thing at a wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do people ever ask, like, when you do a private event, do they ever ask for specific, like, flavor influences?
Absolutely. We take every single event is a curated recipe. At least that's where we're at right now. We try and take into account, like, what flavors they like, what the colors of the wedding, if there's anything in particular they're looking for. One wedding, they wanted a dirty martini. Now, I don't know if you guys know what a dirty martini has in it. It's just vodka. So how do you make that sober?
Water,
no.
Yes.
I mean, yes. I told them I'm not sure I can make that happen, but I told them they can test it. We'll make it as the bride and groom's drink. And we'll make other things for the party, like for the whole party, just because I wasn't that confident. But they said it was amazing. It was a zero proof vodka replacement and a lot of olive juice and then a zero proof vermouth. So it's like all the ingredients, just none of the alcohol.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was the hardest thing I've ever done.
But you did it.
But
how about that?
Really good to have accomplished it. Not only have made it, but mm-hmm. they liked it too.
Yep. And on a big day like a wedding,
yeah.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I need to find a wife because I need you at my wedding that I'm not having.
I mean, I read somewhere you can marry your best friend or yourself.
Cool. I need to get a best friend right now. No. Anyway,
we can put that out.
Yeah, how do you transition from that?
Well,
all right.
I feel like that's where you like put it on like the Facebook. You say like she's seeking best friend, and you do like a picture.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
But only just because we want Brittany there and her sober bar.
Yes.
After we can get an annulment, we can get divorced right after that. No problem, right?
Yep. I know someone that works in family law. It's all right. Anyway, so next weekend, you know, you talked about festivals and everything, mm-hmm. and you guys host one.
We do.
Can you tell us more about that? Because I've been spreading the word. We've got like a group of people who are like wanting to show up. I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear that. So we, last year was our first year, and I was like, let's make a splash. Like, let's go all out and do something different. I don't want to be a small company. I want to be everywhere. I want to be able to make a difference, and I want people to just know like what the Little Sober Bar is. So not only did we do every single event ever the first year, we also hosted the festival, which is called Not a Typical Festival. We did it because it's not a typical bar, but I'm not at it. But also because it's the festival of options. So there's options to donate, multi-genre music, obviously sober drinks, the choice to drink something else, but we have our Sober Curious and Strictly Sober. And then every vendor that was on the field has to have some sort of interactive element. So that way you're actually getting to experience their brand and not just be sold to.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was super important. And then the atypical part of Not a Typical is geared towards the neuro-spicy. That's what we like to call them. So we made sure to have a sensory escape. So if it gets too overwhelming or overstimulating, like for me, that's a lot of times why I would drink. And I'm realizing that now through my journey, that there's a lot of different things that came into play. But I just never wanted to go home to like recalibrate. So by offering some sort of sensory escape somewhere to just decompress, I was able to stay and come back to the party. And so that was really important for me to have on the field. So we'll be having that again, of course, this year.
Where was it? Did we cover that?
We did not. It's in downtown Woodstock.
Downtown Woodstock.
Yep, on the Woodstock Arts Event Green.
Yeah, so all of our Cherokee County listeners, which there are a lot of you, finally have something near us. It's not in Atlanta.
I'm one of them. I'm sold.
I know, me too, dog.
Yeah, yeah. Heck yeah.
It has been in my calendar for months. I'm so excited. Yeah, because like, especially because there's live music. So I'm like, this is like a real festival. Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, there's vendors and booths and awesome. Okay, cool. I'm poor. You know, so like the interactive element, the, you know, live music, get to hang out. Like it is like an event.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited. And thank you for starting something like that.
It's for me. I always tell people, I'm like, it's kind of selfish, but I did all of this because I was like, it's not fair. I want to have options. I want to go to a festival.
Yeah.
So.
I love that. Oh, yeah, there's an actual wedding happening.
Really?
How about that? Sold. Coming here to do business. Yeah. Nice.
Perfect.
That's cool. Yeah. Is this the first time y'all are doing this festival? Or
it's our second.
Second time. Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so navigating stigma throughout your journey, how has that looked from where you started versus where you're at now?
Ooh, it's kind of a multi-layer situation. So some people, I guess what I'd say, like especially like in recovery, it's alternatives are not, like they're frowned upon sometimes in some situations, especially if they are the sober curious options. When we first started, our very first event was in Cherokee County with The Rock. And it's crazy. It's a crazy story because we bought the bar. 2 weeks later, I lost my corporate job. So the universe said, you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
43 days later was that first event. So we rebuilt out that entire bar in 43 days.
Wow.
And I like to say it's because you can do anything one day at a time, which is still, I mean, but for it's true. It's actually true. And I honestly thought that we were going to just be this like beacon for the recovery community when I first started. And that's not what it is. We fit this little small niche in the middle, which I think it's because I'm a Libra and I love the balance of it all, where our main focus is being that option in public, like in the spaces where everybody is, because some people are silently struggling and they just want to drink. And when they walk up to the sober bar, it's just a little easier.
Yeah.
So for me, I want to be every, that's why I'm like, I want to be everywhere. We should be everywhere in every state, every community. That's why we started in the suburbs, because I knew that's where the people were. That's where the people who needed us were.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely love that, because it's, you know, there's those of us who recover out loud and have no problem doing so. And, you know, for the most part, have no problem drinking our waters and our Diet Cokes, and we're fine, you know. But that, I think you are in a very important role as the liaison between the two worlds, you know, the what we call the normies and, you know, the people who are silently struggling and those of us who sometimes just want an option. And it really caters to all three. And then, you know, if you have a problem with it, you don't have to drink it. Just like I have a problem with alcohol, so I don't have to drink it. But that doesn't mean my neighbor can't, you know. So that's really cool. And so how has, like, when people say, like, oh, if you're sober, you're no fun, like sobriety is boring, what's been your experience?
Listen, I am kind of boring. But maybe that's just who I am.
Wait, I didn't ask that.
No, I mean,
about being boring. Listen. What's that experience like?
I mean, I always will respond with humor to questions like that, because I'm like, really? You think I'm boring? That's so rude. I'm not boring, but I do like to play Sims.
That's not boring at all.
It's not boring. You should see what happens. You know,
it's like this whole other universe. It's wild in there.
On The Sims.
Listen, yeah. That's a whole nother episode. No, I would tell people that, like, maybe you just think that because your perception is altered. Maybe you don't know your friends as well as you think you should, or well as you think you do. Being sober is not boring. It's freeing. It gives you back the control you need for yourself and your self-worth, and you can still be super fun and silly and dance. Like, that's one of my favorite things. Something I miss about going to the bars late at night is the dancing part.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can still do all of that, and that's why we do the festival. It's because you can still be fun. It is fun.
Hell yeah. So one of my favorite things to that question that I heard somebody say, it was early on, one of my friends in the program, and he's been sober for like a million years, right? He's been sober for as long as I've been alive, probably. Somebody comes up to him after a meeting, and he's been sober for like 4 months or whatever, and he's like, man, sobriety is just boring. And this guy goes, well, when was the last time you went to the movies? And he said, it's been a while. You know, it was back when I was drinking or getting high or whatever. So when was the last time you went bowling? And he's like, oh, man, I used to get high and go bowling a lot. So when was the last time you just, like, grabbed some friends and walked around the mall or something like that? And he's like, oh, man, it's been years. When was the last concert you went to? Oh, man, it's been a really long time. And he goes, dude, it doesn't sound like being sober is boring. It sounds like you're boring. You know? And it's like the point is whether you've got this thing to shift your whole mind or you don't, whatever it is, that you get to live whatever life that you want to live. Right. Like, I've done so much fun stuff being sober. I got my scuba diving certification in sobriety. Would have never done that when I was drinking and getting high, because I didn't have enough money to do that. Right. Got to do that. Got to go to concerts I never got to go to that I wanted to go to. The point is, like, you get to choose the life that you want when you're sober. When I'm not sober, I don't get to choose to do the things that I like. It usually ends up me just being sad in my room by myself.
Yeah.
I'm boring.
You brought the choice into it, because you were talking about with your menu, there's the choice. And it's like, for me, sobriety has finally given me choice. Because in my addiction, you know, there was all these things that I wanted to do, but every ounce of energy, every penny went towards fueling the addiction. And I was like so scared to get sober, because I was like, I'll lose my sparkle. But my sparkle was nodding off in my car. My sparkle was totaling that car. You know, it was being in, you know, really risky situations. And now it's like, I have tattoos that I want. I had no tattoos before I got sober. I'm getting the piercings that I want. Like, all of these things, like, have been because of sobriety, because I now have the choice of what I'm going to do with my life. Where's my money going to go when I'm done paying the bills? Because I can pay the bills now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like very freeing.
Oh, yeah. I buy so many Sims expansion packs now.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
How many do you have?
Almost all of them. So it's fine. It's fine.
I love that.
Speaking of those.
You're also a simaholic.
Yeah. Well, you know, the energy goes somewhere, like we said.
Listen, it helps me fall asleep.
Yeah.
Because this is a long story, and it's very much an excuse to play Sims every night. But it helps my brain kind of slow down.
Yeah.
Because I do so much all day long.
Yeah.
But I also think that that's something I gained, is that I realized how much I loved it and actually loved playing Sims. It wasn't something I did when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm like, this is my thing, and I'm allowed to like it.
Absolutely.
Of course. I gained, too, and it does the same thing. It turns brain off. Yeah.
I was just talking to a friend in recovery about this the other night, because we were specifically talking about Hogwarts Legacy. but we were talking about, like first-person shooter games being pretty boring, but, like, escaping into these, like, worlds. Like, it gives that escape, and it's magical, it's whimsical, it's the perfect brain off activity, and like finally just like turn it off and then can go to bed after that, you know, don't have to numb it out with a substance to go to bed like in the old days.
Exactly.
But The Sims specifically is such a common thing in sobriety. I've heard so many people getting back into The Sims getting sober, so I don't know what is in that elixir, but
there's something.
The pipeline is strong.
Yeah. I need everyone to find me and let's have chats about this off this podcast. Please.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Start like just an open Discord server.
100%.
Well, what tips would you give to people who are looking to navigate, like if they're not sure if they want to go sober, maybe they are sober curious, but they're just open to being curious.
I think the biggest tip I can give is to stay curious, is to keep that mindset and do whatever feels right for you. Find support if you can. If you can't, isolate. I think for me, I realized how much of an introvert I was. So that's what I mean. I isolated, but it was also what I should have done, I guess. I just didn't know it. I thought I wanted to go out and party all the time. And really, like I said, Sims. Mm. Find something you love, obviously, either work or
The Sims.
The Sims, listen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
We started it. I started it.
I love it.
I'm tired. It's late. So
you're thinking about going home and playing The Sims.
I am.
Yeah,
I am.
Like, why am I on this podcast? I could be playing The Sims right now.
Sims right now. No, I mean, find whatever feels right for you. And if it's something like just having one sober curious drink or one strictly sober drink, maybe that turns into two tomorrow. Maybe that turns into like not drinking all week and just having mocktails and then drinking on the weekends. You know, like you don't know what your journey is until you try something. So that's what I mean by staying curious, is just stay curious and try something.
Yeah. Wow. Stay open-minded.
Like, because going from like, oh, it can just be one drink, and then it can maybe be two drinks, and you're talking about like
sober drinks.
Sober drinks. And it's like, hey, if you're already going to do one drink, but then it's actually two drinks and it's actually three drinks, maybe just do it with a different drink.
Yeah.
Trick your brain.
It's a reframe. Yeah. That's such a huge tool, too, is that people, I think it's kind of forgotten about, is how you can reprogram your brain sometimes. If you obviously sometimes it's a lot harder than normal than for like just going through life pedaling along. But if you're somebody who's just a normie, sometimes if you just replace what's in your hand, you can feel the shift in your mind.
Snacks for me, I'm telling you. Every time I get weird, I give me a snack and I'll be fine. No, I like.
I love snacks too.
Not Scooby snacks.
Yeah, right. I like what you're talking about, being an introvert. And I think one of the things that I learned really in recovery and being sober was the difference between isolation and solitude. And I'm a person who very much needs solitude as an introvert. As I heard somebody share this one time, the difference between being introverted and extroverted. He's like, I'm an introvert. That doesn't mean that I don't like being around people. It means that it takes energy for me to be around people, and I need to be in solitude in order to recharge. Whereas extroverts will actually get their recharging from being around people. that was something that I needed to learn a lot, because when I was drinking and I was using and I was back then, I would isolate, which means I would shut myself off from the entire world. Nobody's getting in this my little box, and this my whole life exists when in here. And now it's like, no, I do. I enjoy being around my people and my friends and my family and all this for a certain amount of time before I need to retreat and then recharge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then find me some solitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And play my games.
Which is really hard when you have two kids. But it's actually kind of nice because I'm enjoying them again, which is a hard thing to admit and say. But I'm also super real. And I'm real with them, too. Mm-hmm. And they prefer mommy like this.
Yeah.
And I've sponsored
solitude a lot.
Yeah.
I've sponsored many moms in my journey, which I don't know why. Like, I don't know what energy I'm putting out there where, like, these moms are like, she knows what I can do. I have no kids, but I've heard so many of them talk about the transition of, like, when they're first trying to get sober and their kids are just so overwhelming to them and they feel so guilty that they don't want to be around their kids because they just want solitude. They want peace, and their kids are very overstimulating. And then after a couple of weeks, it's like, I was patient with my kids today. Mm-hmm. I hung out with my kids today. And like that transition of my kids are too much to I can be present for my kids now. And that's a really beautiful thing to witness, but it's also an important thing to talk about. Because of like the mom guilt that I hear people having, especially in early sobriety. So do you have like a specific piece of advice for that group of people?
Mm. Apologize. Like, don't be afraid to apologize to your kids. I think that's something that I hope that I've always been good at. I apologized to my daughter the other day and she's like, I said, because I work a lot. I said, I'm so sorry that I have to go to work again. She's like, it's all right. I want a mansion. And I was like,
well, get on it, Mom.
Tomorrow.
Like, well, I said, I'm going to work, not you.
Yeah. But I mean, just having those open conversations with them and her feeling free enough to like say that and not have me yell or like be upset that she's not upset with me or any of the, like, I mean, I still feel mom guilt now that I work so much, but it's nice to have, like I said, be open, be honest, apologize to your kids, and just talk them through your life.
Yeah.
They understand and they can, they understand more than you think. And they can accept a lot. They don't like it when you're fake. Mm. They can see right through that.
Mm. All right, so let's do some hot takes. Okay. We got the serious shit out the way.
Hot take.
So what would you say is overrated and underrated in recovery culture?
I think overrated would be
water.
No, there's so many different waters out there and it's kind of cool. Like, listen.
What about that liquid death? I read a lot about that today. They're marketing.
Marketing is awesome.
Right? Yeah.
They have just regular water. It's in the white can and I can have it because it has no bubbles and I feel part of.
See, the part of the inclusion part.
Yes.
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. So yeah, I would say overrated would be, well, I guess water. I think that sparkling water is a good base, but I think sparkling water companies are now coming out with like mocktail sparkling waters, and I'm like,
so now you're not water anymore.
Yeah. Or like the hard seltzers now doing like non-alcoholic. Yeah. It's like, okay, so you've gone in reverse.
Yeah, that's definitely overrated.
Minute Maid today now has Minute Maid hard lemonade. I'm like, no, that's a child's drink. Stop it. I saw an ad for that on my way here tonight.
That's a whole nother can of worms. Is like the marketing of alcoholic drinks, and I felt this way when I was drinking, but like the marketing of alcoholic drinks that are like kid flavors, like sodas. I'm big in marketing. That's like my thing. I love it, but that makes me irate almost, because I'm like, why are kids being taught that this is normal, that this is like what they should have? And we've done a lot of like kids' birthday parties, which is really kind of weird. Like, we're an adult alternative beverage company, and we went to a 9-year-old's birthday party last week, but it's awesome. Because to me, we're showing them that this is what a bar could look like. The bar doesn't have to look like what you've seen on TV.
The bar has sodas.
The bar has sodas. The bar has multi-layered different kids' drinks with a smoke bubble on top that we would probably serve to an adult with less sugar. but they still loved it. And they're getting that experience and they're learning. So I guess my overrated actually is going to be that one. The marketing of adult beverages that are kid flavored or like the colors of what a kid would be drawn to. Because that makes me just like, you know?
And what about underrated?
I think small brands. Hands down, small brands in the non-alc world and people in recovery like not choosing to try something, I think that's underrated. It's like there are so many amazing zero proof brands that will even change the name of the drink so it's not like a margarita or something triggering. And it's okay, I think, in my part, is like those type of drinks are what we would put out at an event that's for recovery. And it's like just if you are open to it and if you aren't going to get triggered, like come on over, try it, no pressure. Mm-hmm. But I think people will shy away from that sometimes.
Yeah.
And what are some misconceptions about like the Little Sober Bar, Sober Curious, Strictly Sober that you would want to clear up?
The Little Sober Bar will never have alcohol ever. We get asked that sometimes by people who are like, oh, so you have alcohol? And I'm like, no.
Can you read?
No.
People really can't. No.
Yeah, we just got some moonshine in the bag. Hang on. Yeah. Let me whip it out real quick.
They're
yeah.
like, oh, you have, I was like, make it, I would write something. It's like, I don't even use those words. I don't use spike it. I don't use any kind of words like that. They're like, oh, so you do have alcohol for this drink. And I'm like, what? No.
Start from the beginning.
No. Oh. So
Sober Curious means like there's just like a little bit of alcohol in it.
And I'm like, yes, our non-alc options that are 0.5% or less. They're like, where's the alcohol? I'm like, right here. 0.5% or less. And they're like, what? And I'm like, you asked.
Yeah, because to the normie world, that has no alcohol into it. Mm-hmm. But then to the recovery world, that definitely yeah. has alcohol in it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why it's on our Sober Curious menu. Because I never want someone to worry that their menu is not safe for them.
Yeah. Because I've definitely seen those 0.5 and under drinks, I've definitely seen those drinks take people back to full-blown alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, it's great that that is an option because it does work for some people. Mm-hmm. But it's great that there's options otherwise because that can be triggering for other people. And it's not a test of will. No. It's not a test of like, oh, well, this person's better than that person. Nothing like that. It's like our body makeup, our brain chemistry, mm-hmm. our body's literally cannot handle alcohol, even 0.5% for some of us. It's awesome if you're not one of those people.
Yeah, congratulations on that, actually. Yeah. yeah.
For real.
Sorry. Yeah. What? If you're not one of those people, congratulations. yeah. It's wonderful yeah. for you. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Not for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's another thing, too, is that a lot of bars and restaurants don't think about that either. They're like, oh, yeah, you're sober? Yeah, we have a mocktail menu. We have beer. And they're like, these are all 0.5s. Everything that you're offering somebody is 0.5. And no one really thinks about that step.
Yeah.
Like to separate it.
Yeah.
So that's why it's really important for us. That's why we separate it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, as we come in for a close, do you have some final thoughts, things that you wish we touched on, that you want to get the word out about?
I would say, I mean, we talked about the festival. We have a big announcement happening there, so that's cool.
Yes,
I can't talk about it, but there's a big announcement.
There's good marketing right there.
Yeah,
yeah, dang it, I need to find out. I'm going.
Well,
all right.
Our tagline is Stay Curious. So.
Oh, dang, come she on got down. Me there, yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else really we want to touch on. I do think that anyone who's in recovery that's listening to this, which I'm hoping everyone who's listening, but also I'm going to be sharing it, so hopefully some of our regular customers will listen too. I think that they should just know that, number one, obviously they're not alone. No matter where you're at in your journey, it doesn't have to look the same to anyone else. And there are places like me all over the nation. There's sober bars or sober bottle shops, like dry bottle shops. They're all over. And sometimes maybe something there will help you, or maybe someone there will help you. So find your local bottle shop.
And I did hear that these are like really really coming through in society and communities today, even in colleges and stuff like that. And I think that's really cool. I think it gives people an opportunity to enjoy a different kind of environment, mm-hmm. and it can help shift a lot of what we thought was cool or fun to something healthier, right?
Agreed. Yeah. And I think, too, like the whole kid part is that Gen Z is drinking less, millennials are drinking less, the next generation is drinking less, and then if we teach our kids that that's not like the norm, like what is that actually going to look like in recovery in the future? Like, are we going to have less because of the brain chemistry makeup part? Are these kids now, I don't want to say like trained out of it, but almost trained out of it being normal?
Yeah.
And then they aren't falling into the recovery cycle that we're all in. So I'm hopeful for the future.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where can people find you online? Website, socials?
We are The Little Sober Bar on all social media, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and then our website is littlesoberbar.com.
Awesome. And your event schedules and everything are?
Oh, yeah. All on social media. Like I said, marketing. Love it. So.
Awesome. And you do a good job with yours. I've been following you for a while. I'm like, keep me on my toes. Now I got to know this announcement. So next weekend, hurry up.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I think this has been an incredible conversation on opening up about, you know, Sober Curious, Suburbanite, and just your journey. Thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you to our donors, supporters, and everyone here hanging out with us. Don't forget to download the Most High Media app for free recovery content, including recovery stories, this podcast, and other recovery-related content. This has been the Most High Show.
All right.